Welcome, I'm Ryan Hicks, and this is Modern Business, the podcast to learn from franchise business leaders and explore new business technology. Our community is about sharing knowledge and tools that help us achieve our goals in business and beyond. Thanks for being here, and welcome to Modern Business. Hey, welcome back to Modern Business Podcast. This is the podcast for all things franchising, and we are on our second episode of the day. I'm actually super excited to host the gentleman that we will be introducing momentarily, and I actually have to say I felt a little nostalgic as we made the drive over to Fort Worth, Texas, because I went to school here, so it's good to be back in Fort Worth. Is this technically Fort Worth, or are we like
In Tarrant County, but I think we are actually in the city limits, barely.
Yeah, right. Barely. Right at the city limits. But I guess we'll jump straight in. Super excited for the episode. Zach, any top of house?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was talking to folks out here, because you certainly, and you yourself, of course, have a lot of people who fit this demographic, but a young conference. We're doing a pretty awesome conference down in Fort Lauderdale on January 30th to February 1st. So for folks who haven't heard anything about that, we are, registration is just opened not even a week ago. So franchiseyoungconference.com if you want to learn a little bit more about that. If you are young or young-minded in the franchise space and you kind of want to network with some others like you, that's the conference for it.
A really phenomenal group of folks. And I think we're capping it. What is it at? 125?
125.
Hard cap.
Otherwise, the hotel is telling us we have no more room for you.
But it's a really cool hotel, and it's not bad in December to be in Fort Lauderdale. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, excuse me, in January.
We're
in
December. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So really, really looking forward to this episode. You know, we for folks who are avid listeners, you will recognize this brand now, and you probably didn't the first time that we spoke to Andrew from, you know, our Next Esteemed Guest team. But we were lucky enough to wrangle in the big man today for this one. So really looking forward to having on Justin Howe, who is the leader really of this entire charge of HTO. Really, really awesome brand. We're drinking some tea right now.
Yeah, so whenever you hear the ice crinkle, that's our tea. It's really good, by the way.
Yeah, I'm a big tea guy, so I have been telling Justin's team for a while that I wanted to try, and I'm happy I get a chance to. So, Justin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we keep it brewed every day in the break room there. So,
yeah,
it's awesome. Whether we need it or not.
Yeah, it's awesome. We're really appreciative of you having us out here. I have to say, this is my very first time in Fort Worth. I've traveled many, many places. I've never been here before. But Ryan just found out on the drive over here, which is pretty wild. But,
I need to pick the lunch spot that I'm going to take him. As I mentioned, I went to school out in Fort Worth. But the last thing I'll say before we kick it off is we've been in a lot of offices, and this office has some good vibes. I'm feeling it. You can definitely tell we're in Texas.
Yeah, you can definitely tell we're in Texas. And I commented on the whiskey collection over there.
Yeah.
It's too bad that Ryan needs to drive back. I guess is what I have to say. Thank God I don't have to. Yeah. But I'm really looking forward to having
you. I'm ADD real bad, so there's no windows by design.
Smart.
Yeah,
it's there. A hole over there with those screens and stay focused.
Yeah, very. It's definitely good to stay focused. Well, we'll be in the spirit of that. Let's hop into it a little bit, because we'd love to just kind of hear your story, because I think that you have a great story. So I would love to kind of hear, you know, the founding story of HTO and how you kind of came up with this idea and how we're where we are today.
Yeah, man, it's been crazy. You know, I grew up. You know, I live with a family of entrepreneurs. I grew up, my mom owned a hair salon. My dad was a cabinet maker and a carpenter and owned his own construction company. My mom remarried my stepdad when I was 10, and he was in the restaurant business, and his family was all in the restaurant business. And so I really just kind of looked at the world, I suppose, a little different. Didn't realize that till I kind of got to college. But yeah, we just grew up, you know, running and starting businesses. And not to get too much into that, in 2008, when everything was kind of on shaky ground, I guess, you know, when the economy was, real estate in particular, was really tanking, mm-hmm. we were interested in the sales at our hamburger restaurant, Buns Over Texas in Amarillo. It's a legacy brand, a hamburger, mm-hmm. hamburger business that my granddad started in the 80s, that my parents bought quickly after it was up and running. And my stepdad ran it from the very beginning. In early 2008, you know, we're always talking about how do we get sales up as a restaurant brand? How do you reinvent yourself? What keeps your customers coming back? and sales were flat, you know, for the first time in, I guess, 20 years, sales were sort of flat. And so my mom and my stepdad were always brainstorming, how do we get sales up? And of course, I'm on my own at the time. I have several other businesses that I run and own at the time. So I'm not particularly, you know, interested in the specific success of that business. But at family dinners and such, we always brainstorm, how do we get sales up? They came up with the idea of adding 6 flavors of tea to the hamburger restaurant. Mm. And so just like you'd have a Coke machine, we had 6 flavors of tea. And he worked really hard to find some unique flavor profiles that were, you know, unique to any restaurant, and did a good job brewing the tea. I mean, it tastes exactly the same as it does in the hamburger restaurant today, which we own now as a HTO, part of the HTO Global brand. We actually own that brand now. Mm. And so, it tastes the same as it did in 2008. And I was very, very focused on quality and the flavor profiles, and it worked. And the next year, sales were up 15% at the hamburger place. So, simultaneously, you know, the real estate market's crashing. We're in a end cap in a shopping center that's owned by a national institutional investor, if you will. And we have the end cap leases coming up pretty soon. We have some options to renew. My stepdad's very tenacious. Was attempting to buy a 35,000 square foot pad in front of the center, which is in this type of center with an institutional investor is very unique. You don't mm-hmm. just don't carve out a pad and buy it from a mm-hmm. from a real company. You know what I mean? And so he was able to get someone's attention when the occupancy of that center got down to about 60%. So timing was just right. Thank God the economy crashed. He was able to buy a 35,000 square foot pad site in front of that restaurant. And my construction company, I was a home builder at the time and built some commercial projects, got the job to build a new Buns Over Texas. And on the end, he designed, my mom and Gary, my stepdad, designed an end cap, 1,200 foot end cap. And all they were going to sell was iced tea. And I thought, man, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard, but great job. And so we went to work building the restaurant. And he thought, you know, if this thing does $350 a day in sales, it'll pay the rent. And so, you know, we've got extremely low cost of goods sold. I say extremely low by comparison. We're a margin lower than the restaurant brands that we own, right? Mm-hmm. Our labor's similar. And so, you know, we've got a little bit of survivability, a little lower break even, it's a little easier to maybe, run an experiment here. So he starts to sell iced tea out of the drive up. He also has a walk-in automatic door where you walk in and fill up your glass self-serve, 18 flavors at the time. So we went from 6 in the restaurant. We started selling gallons to the restaurant. Then we went to the new story store. We had 18 flavors. And the restaurant, the Buns restaurant, still sells tea to this day. And then the end cap on the end, we started selling tea. And man, it was, I wouldn't say it was an overnight success, but it definitely gained some momentum over time. I think first year sales and second year sales were, second year doubled first year. So it took a minute to get some traction, mm-hmm. but we're talking about 2009. And so, you know, and it just kept getting stronger every day. And we were, you know, just sort of not really believing that this was a real business, because you still don't see anything like this today.
Yep.
But back in 2009, we're like, yeah, this isn't real. This is just, you know, we know a lot of people in town. We own multiple businesses. We kind of know everyone. My family went to First Baptist Church for 100 years. And my sister's a cheerleader at the high school right down the street, you know, and it's like, Is this working because we're good marketers and we own all these businesses? Because I own several businesses in town too. Or is this a real concept? And at the time, I didn't believe it was real. And I don't know that they did either, but we're also not dummies. So we kind of paid real close attention. I'm an airplane broker by trade, professional pilot since 2000. So I've been flying airplanes as a professional my whole life. Kind of on my own, thought I'd do my own thing, not get in the construction business, not get in the restaurant business, and do the airplane thing. And I did do that. But at the same time, this is starting to kind of get some momentum and gain some traction. I also started a granite countertop fabrication company in 2001, which we still have today, that does we have 2 locations in Amarillo, and it does it's just a tremendous success and does a great volume every week. We're the largest countertop fabricator in the Panhandle. So I kind of got my own thing going, you know, but we're kind of paying attention to this little experiment, iced tea drive-through people are driving through and buying tea. And again, we just don't believe it's real. So somewhere around 2012, my mom and my stepdad approached me and they said, listen, let's try to take this to the next level and grow this thing. And I'm like, man, I don't know if we have a thing or not, you know? So, and we didn't either. They didn't either, but you know, again, ambitious, let's try something. So we decided to partner. And so we devised the company 50-50 and said everything going forward is 50-50 and we're going to charge ahead as partners. And the first project was to build a prototype store, a freestanding prototype store. And so we did, and it wasn't cheap, and it's definitely not cheap today, but we got the best piece of real estate you could possibly imagine. Again, we're successful in other businesses and, you know, kind of have other things going. So this is a total experiment. Mm-hmm. You would never start a company like this relying on it for an income, right? We're relying on it for data. We're just trying to build something to gain some data to see if this is a real concept. So we pulled the trigger, got the best piece of real estate in town. My construction company got the contract to build this building too. So that was a win. And then we opened our second location, which is usually top five every week now still. So it's a pretty high volume store in terms of transaction volume, not necessarily in terms of gross sales, because we're a lot better at raising our per transaction volume these days than we were then. And it's real hard to rechain consumer behavior once it's kind of established. So, but it's still one of our highest volume stores in terms of transaction volume. We're actually closed today. We're implementing some massive innovation, and we've closed the entire store for the last 2 days for a big remodel. So we got some kind of new things cooking there. But yeah, so we opened it as a prototype experiment. We built it, you know, we merchandised it. We put our heads together, and we had around this table. This table's been in my office for as long as I've been in business. And around this table and a couple other conference room tables, which one is in Amarillo, man, we just brainstormed on a chalkboard like that, and sat here with the marketing team and you know, my parents and my wife and my kids and just what is this and why are people coming here? So we would open the doors, turn the switch on, and just stare at people and go, why are you here? Why are you walking it? Why is this working? You know what I mean? And still not really believing what's going on. But yeah, built it as a prototype experiment and then just kept taking, you know, step after step in the prototype stage. And of course, when we opened the second store, we're just, you know, lots of transaction volume, lots of cars in the drive up, you know, lots of people walking out in and out of the store. And so people are like, we want to open one of those. We want to open one of those. And so, you know, we've been pressured to franchise for a long time. We didn't know if we had a real business yet. You know what I mean? We hadn't proved the concept and to ourselves. I always tell people we're really good at losing our money, but when you start to lose other people's money, it changes the game really, you know, significantly. So mm-hmm. We just didn't believe in the model. So this was another prototype that we were using to build data, and we got better at it and better at it. And we'd reconfigure and re-merchandise and we had all these problems with the business, which I may or may not have time to go into, but you know, we didn't have a supply chain. We had to mm-hmm. build that from scratch. We didn't own the trademark outside of our prior, we have prior use rights to the Texas T name in Amarillo. We didn't own those outside of what would be called the natural expansion area, which would have had to have been litigated to determine the boundaries of it. So we knew we weren't going to be able to use that name nationwide unless we were able to negotiate a license agreement, which we got very close to doing later on. But we knew that we had to, you know, rebrand HTO. We filed for the HTO trademark in 2013. We didn't even open the prototype store until August of 2014. And so the first store is 2009, second store is 2014. We partnered in 2012. It took us 2 years to get that first store open.
Wow.
But we filed for that trademark in 2013, the HTO trademark, and then opened the Texas T in 2014. Needing to solve that problem, you know what I mean? We every decision we made was for a national expansion. From supply chain to the trademark issues to the flavor profile, so the supply chain logistics. Every decision was made so that we could scale this thing, right? I want my store managers making tea and loving customers and hugging necks and not trying to figure out where am I going to buy blueberry tea.
Yep.
So we manufacture all the tea. We had to build the supply chain. you know, we had 40 different vendors at one point when Gary was the supply chain, my stepdad. We have 500 retail SKUs in the building now. And of course, our supply chain company handles all of that because I want my store managers calling two people to supply that store with everything they need to run it. That's a food service vendor for groceries. Yep. And that's us for anything that's got a barcode on it, any of the proprietary tea. So we control the supply chain so that it's reliable, I suppose. And this year has been a unique challenge, but we really just, they crushed it. You know, we've got double the inventory on hand at our big warehouses that we need. But anyway, back to the story, the original location was just a prototype. People are asking us, can we open one? And you know, it's not easy to build a FDD and a franchise agreement, a development agreement. These are not easy things to accomplish. So obviously we knew we weren't going to be able to do it soon, but we were building data, trying to prove the concept to ourselves. I did go ahead and engage some franchise attorneys, the best franchise attorney in the world, in my opinion. And she did a fantastic job putting our FDD together. It took us about a year to get through it. You know, lots of decisions, lots of very, very important decisions that you need to be careful about making.
Yep.
In terms of how much do you charge? When do you charge? What are the rules? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of different things that you have to go through. It took us about a year, still not believing in our concept, but and faith taking steps to build this, to expand and to be a real franchise concept. So we started taking those steps early, and then we thought, you know, we've got to open an HTO, right? We have the Texas Tea, the two stores, they work great, but we don't have an HTO. And of course, this is our national brand. So we've got to open an HTO. Mm-hmm. We could have done it in Lubbock. We could have done it in Canyon. We could have done it, you know, real close to home where my ops team is easy to access the store. Or we could put it way far away from our home location to challenge us logistically from an operations standpoint. And more importantly, to prove the concept. Mm-hmm. And so we chose Midland, Texas to plan our prototype store number two, which is a 4-hour drive from Amarillo.
Very, very familiar. Zach has no clue where that's at.
Yeah.
Literally zero.
Yeah.
But. So Midland. So this is, what year is this?
We opened the Wolfland Amarillo store, prototype number one, 2014. This is 2016. We signed a lease in Midland, and we get that store open in 2018. So yeah, but from 2014 to 2016, we're just kind of in there going, is this real? And of course, again, year one sales doubled year two in that location. So, you know, it builds momentum, but it's a new concept that nobody's ever seen anything like this. So we're still just building data, but we get to the point in 2016, we're like, you know what? This has legs. We hire the franchise attorney. We start walking through that. We start to build an ops manual. We start to reverse engineer everything we're doing operationally. We've already built a significant amount of the supply chain company, but we've got to really kind of build a real infrastructure there with, we had to buy a truck. We had to secure some more warehouse space. We've got to set up master vendor relationships with all these retailers and convince them that, you know, that we deserve to be awarded a license. Yeti, for instance, Yeti coolers was an interesting challenge, which is a great story in and of itself, just because I'm friends with one of the Cedars brothers and kind of got in that way. I had one of my guys fill out all the paperwork online to become a retail vendor for Yeti, a licensed vendor. And of course they denied us. And I thought we actually had a good chance of being approved. They denied us. So I called my buddy Rick and I'm like, hey man, they denied us as a dealer. You think you could help me out? He goes, hang on a minute. So he puts the phone down and he calls his brother Roy Cedars, who's one of the founding brothers. He's like, Roy, I got Justin, that tea guy, on the phone. He's like, yeah, Justin, how you doing? He's like, Roy, y'all just denied his application to become a dealer. He said, what? He said, hang on a minute. Puts us on hold and he said, you're approved. I'll have you an email by the end of the day. So it's like, thanks, Roy. And we hung up and now we're a master Yeti dealer. So
nice.
But they weren't approving any retailers at that point. It was when they just launched the tumblers and they started to really get popular. So they were kind of overwhelmed. But anyway, just that story is just over and over and over how kind of things fall into place in terms of supply chain. But lots of problems to solve to really prove to us that this is a business that is worthy of franchising, frankly, because again, it's just a different animal. It's not your money. It's not your experiment anymore. It's someone else's. So we got to prove the concept. So we go to Midland, we open an HTO. We tweaked a little bit, the model, the layout of the store, the merchandising, the way the T bars are set up, the drive through, the back of house. We, you know, we kind of tweaked it to what we thought store number three, this is store number three now, should operate like. And knowing kind of the metrics behind one and two in terms of labor cost and cost of goods sold, mm-hmm. and occupancy cost, we kind of have our success matrix kind of pinned down in terms of what we expect for the numbers. And we go to Midland and open that store. And I'm pretty confident that if this works in Midland, I'm going to be comfortable selling a franchise license to someone, which we had 20 ready to write a check at the time. And I'm just not going to do it. I mean, I don't need another job, and I damn sure just don't want to put other people's money at risk when I don't believe the concept's real wholly. I mean, in Amarillo, you go back to, you know, you're good marketers. I mean, you guys go to your hometowns, and the networks that you build over a lifetime of relationships is not moving to a new town and opening a business, right? It's easy to market something in your hometown. And so we were good at that. We just didn't believe that. We believed that there was a good chance that this was going to work, but we just didn't know for sure. So, but we had everything in place. Andrew, you interviewed. Andrew worked for us before we opened the first HTO.
Wow.
A full-time franchise development employee. I mean, he was in, and you know, he's the real deal. He's worked for a couple other brands. So it's not that we didn't expect it to work. It's just that we didn't have the proof yet. Right. So Andrew was here. Brad was here, who's our EVP right now, and also serves as the vice president of real estate development. He was here. He's the one that also built our supply chain company. And so everyone's in place. All your teams on the field were ready to go, but we just didn't know if this thing was going to work. So January of 2018, we were able to open the doors in Midland, and it was a slow start. I mean, you start anything, you know, you try to open a tea business in Q4, it's just hard to compete with the obscurity that comes with the holidays, right? So we opened early January, and it took a minute to build some momentum. In fact, we didn't sign the first franchise agreement till mid-April. And again, Andrew's worked here for almost a year before he got to sell the first store. Mm-hmm. And so but we got there. We opened it, new brand, new name, new concept, new town, new market, new people, new look, new feel. Everything's new. If this works, we're going to go for it.
We got something
here. And it did. Yeah. And that store is probably blocking traffic right now on Andrews Highway in Midland. It's number one or two right now in sales. But again, with time, these things, they just gain momentum over time. I mean, and you know, you serve a good product and love your customers, which is one of the unique parts of our brand. They just build over time. So it worked. We sold our first franchise April 18th of 2018, and I think Andrew just told us we were at 325.
Incredible.
I think we have 325. Three or four of those are out for signature. So by the end of the month, it will be solid at 325. 325 licenses. 42 locations open, 45 under construction.
Wow.
Yeah. 42 open, 45 under construction, 30 leases at the finish line. We're tracking 20 leases to be signed by the end of December.
And so as you kind of look at the ideal operators for this business, I think we were chatting a little bit before, you obviously have folks that are developing out multiple units. You probably have also some single unit operators as well. But what's an ideal candidate that you're looking for to bring into the system?
And that's a good question. Yeah, very, very unique time for us. In the beginning, it's all about owner operator, one guy, one store. We have six multi-unit operators. Most of those have under five stores. And so all we have is data. All we have is a recipe. How did we do it, right?
Yeah.
We make decisions within our data. We analyze the data, we analyze the recipe, and that's what kind of guides us through how do we decide what an operator is, right? So in the beginning, it's an operator. It's an owner operator. It's the guy that owns the store, hugging the customers, selling the tea, creating the guest experience. Logical, right? And that's where we're at. So that was the criteria. That's changing as we overcome obscurity in markets like the Metroplex, mm-hmm. like in Houston or San Antonio. As the brand starts to gain momentum, you know, it's funny because I didn't foresee this to change quite like it has. But once you've overcome obscurity, really now you have these outlying communities that have a single store operator. And now you've got a like you got a man on the field over there by himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to have some more stores over there to support the brand.
Yeah, it's good for everybody.
Yeah. And so, but you've got that single store operator over there and he needs help. He needs some synergy. He needs a couple of more stores in the area to grow the brand, right? Well, so how do we do that? Well, as many franchise licenses, as many stores as we have open, as many as that we have under construction, the criteria for the operator is changing. And so multi-unit operators are definitely, and coming from an internal source, frankly, you know, we want to look inward first to see any of the potential franchise partners that we have are potential multi-unit operators. Of course, they all want to be, right? And so some may not want to be anymore. Some may want more. But should they be? Correct. Yeah. And so we want to look inward first, but multi-unit operators leveraging the success that they've already had, leveraging their balance sheets to grow faster. Now we have these, you know, kids out there. I say kids. I just mean like you're a man on the team is out there by himself. He needs support, right? And so you want to get him some support quick. Well, you don't do that by putting another single store, single unit operator out there. You need a multi-unit operator surround the area. So the growth strategy, and as we accelerate the growth, as I see the data come in where these stores are all, the numbers are all rising with the center, with the brand exposure, right? Within the Metroplex, for instance, we're close to inking a deal with, I don't know if I can say it, but we're in several Major League Baseball stadiums. We're very close to inking a deal with a very popular venue in the metro in Dallas.
I think I see that venue out of my front window.
You might. So we're just, it's all but signed at this point. As the brand grows,
that's going to do great things for the brand.
Yeah, 189 events a year, and just look at the diversity in terms of brand awareness, right? And so we're just trying to overcome obscurity, and so you just don't realize the importance of growth. And so everybody's like, "How fast are you going to grow?" I'm like, "Man, as fast as the brand needs us to grow, because when you got a man over here by himself, you got to grow as fast as you can to overcome obscurity in those markets. And now we're in Florida, we're in 12 states, right?
Why HTO over, I mean, there's a lot of different food concepts that folks can operate. It sounds like you also have some folks that maybe operate other brands and they're looking at this and saying, "Hey, this is super compelling," but why this over, you know,
man, that's a good question. Lots of good reasons. I mean, number one, we're looking at a product, a commodity that's being consumed, globally, maybe more than any other beverage that's ever been consumed. I mean, think about when Starbucks took coffee out of a pancake restaurant. Idiots. You know what I mean? the only ones, the first to market, the only ones innovating in a particular space, and they're definitely ahead of a trend, right? And so that was a unique, you look back at data and you look at history and any of these brands that are innovating and first to market and ahead of a trend, those are the brands that dominate, particularly if they have good leadership. And so you look at brands like that and see what's happened, and you see that potential is here too. So that's one reason. The product is another amazing reason. I mean, it's the one of the most unique experiences. For instance, you know, for day one training, we instruct you not to go tell your banker you're going to open a tea business and ask for a loan, because he's gonna laugh at you and tell you to go back home or find a real job, right? So it's like, you're going to open a lemonade stand? Sure. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And so so until you see it,
make sense.
Dollars, that's right. So until you see it, do you understand what we're even doing? Because you can't explain it. You won't explain it. I mean, I tell everybody we invented the Starbucks of iced tea. That's the only sentence that I can say that explains quickly, and they still look at you funny. But if I were to say, "Oh, we have a drive-through iced tea business," that it's just no comprehension whatsoever. So you think back to Starbucks when they bring coffee out of a pancake restaurant and put it in a freestanding location and try to do a better job. Then they try to push it through a drive-thru. They operate quicker. And we're talking about many, many moons ago. But if you look at it, the coffee world is just now figuring out how to compete with Starbucks.
Yep.
Just now. You look back at the 70s. You're just now seeing brands emerge that can legitimately compete with Starbucks. And we are competing with Starbucks.
Yep.
I mean, we are, frankly, we are. I mean, they bought Teavana in I can't remember exactly what year, but I do know, I know the math on the deal. And
2000s, it was like our mid-2000s, it didn't work very
well. Yeah, well, I mean, they paid $1 million a location with $500,000 AUV, which is just ridiculous valuation, but it's it was an amazing deal. But their goal was to increase their afternoon sales.
To do what
sales.
You guys are doing, and they never did it.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why that probably I'm not going to share with you that I can see operationally from the back end as to why it doesn't work. But yeah, exactly. They tried. I mean, anybody can go and put a box of syrup together and propel it with some propellant and run it through a Coke machine and call it tea, right? But the consumer knows what the difference, what that tastes like, right? They know the difference between something that's brewed fresh. I do. My customers are all becoming very quickly learned on exactly what good tea tastes like. But you know, you just can't duplicate that through an automated process. The supply chain, the infrastructure, it's extremely difficult to do what we're doing. So anyway, so that's, and the other reason, potential reason would be just we're actually giving multi-unit operators and franchise partners the ability to own real estate. Nice. If you think about, you know,
they own their own dirt, it's smart.
We're seeing about 40% of our deals, land that we purchase. We're a preferred developer. I have other preferred developer partners. We encourage you as a franchise partner to own your own dirt. But if you go ahead.
I was actually just going to say, we need to talk to him about the person that reached out to you for the GC contact deployment. We'll do that offline.
Yeah.
Just funny.
Well, if you think about an emerging brand, right? How do you do what we're doing, right? From a franchise, how do you become a franchisor and grow rapidly? You don't draw on the chalkboard, build freestanding units next door to Starbucks, between a Starbucks and a Chick-fil-A. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't
good
map.
For traffic.
It doesn't map financially, especially with an emerging concept, right? So it's a difficult pill to swallow. So what do? If you're an emerging franchisor, you put them in end caps on strip centers. Mm. You put them in a strip center, right? These are institutional investors or at least professional investors that own real estate that can lease it. They might even do a build to suit where you don't have to put a lot of finish out money in it. It's low risk, but it's also low reward, but there's no chance of owning a strip center. So we're actually teaching how do you buy a piece of dirt and develop it into a location. We're doing 40% of our deals that way, and we've done 100 of them today.
I'm sure that'll increase as time goes on, too.
Absolutely.
Just get more branded.
Absolutely. And the amount of capital that's flooding to the system to support the development is real. And we're able to, you know, if you think about reduced cost of goods sold and reduced labor, it gives you a little bit more budget to spend on real estate than another restaurant concept. For instance, if you take a traditional restaurant concept and a cost of goods sold are here at a certain level. If we're under that, then that delta we can use and move it to occupancy costs. So we can actually afford more real estate. If it pays off, it goes into your pocket as profit.
Yep.
And so these reasons are the reason why that day after tomorrow, there'll be 37 people in that classroom that only holds 25. They'll all be wearing masks, I'm sure. And you'll see behind the wall there.
Where are they from? Chicago?
Yeah. No. But behind the wall there, we're building a huge classroom there. I mean, we just, you know, the discovery days. And these have been vetted thoroughly. Like we're seeing the most unbelievable candidates in terms of quality. It's just a real exciting time. It's very humbling.
What else? So you mentioned, you have the teas and by the way, it's phenomenal. I'm sitting here drinking it. You can probably in the audience here. You mentioned like other items. What else are you, what are
So we have healthy snacks. So we source healthy snacks through directly from the manufacturer. So we've got master accounts with all the snack products that make the cut in terms of what we'll merchandise and the ability to merchandise. These are not profit centers. This is not a significant portion of sales. It's a complimentary.
It
increases the guest experience. I mean, we have bacon. I don't know if you saw the bacon in there. It's like beef jerky, but it's a stick of bacon. It's amazing. There's like five flavors. Beef jerky products. Yeah, I mean, healthy snacks. I mean, we're just looking at healthy snack options. But then again, we have all the retail products in terms of Yeti, Pelican. We're a master Yeti dealer. Pelican. We're a master Pelican dealer. You know, we've got Hydro Flask, Kind Bar, Cliff Bar, Pop Chips, Kettle Chips, Project 7. A good friend of mine owns that company. And just the highest quality of snacks. But most recently, we've added coffee. Yeah, we're rolling out coffee. We have coffee in three or four locations. We just converted our second tea-only location to coffee. It's been phenomenal. And we're not trying to be a coffee business. We've designed every one of these stores to support coffee from the very beginning, at least from a mechanical standpoint. They'll be able to support it. They have to do some work. That's what we're remodeling our stores to do.
Got it.
Excuse me. So we're adding coffee. Our morning sales are enough to stay open. If you analyze it based on labor costs, what labor does it cost to keep the store open? We run enough business to keep the store open in the morning, and I want it to be open at 7 a.m. and potentially earlier for that school teacher or the nurse or whoever's going to work to stop by and be able to get a glass of tea. But the coffee sales are really going to make those morning hours make a lot of sense. So we're super excited about that. And then of course, all the cold coffee drinks now are the horchata. We've got a horchata espresso and the cold brew coffee is legit. So, but again, we're a tea company. We sell iced tea. We're an iced tea company that sells coffee, and we're never going to be, you know, become a coffee. In fact, we opened a third wave coffee shop. We started to develop. I hired an unbelievable coffee connoisseur, I guess you'd say. And we worked through some consultants that are close friends of mine that really understand what does coffee mean, with the full intention of coming to the finish line of this coffee project and saying, nope, doesn't fit the model, doesn't fit the brand. We were fully prepared to not put coffee in any store after spending a significant amount of money on R&D. We get to the finish line of the project and it just fits. It just works. The coffee doesn't interfere with the smell of the tea. It's just a good fit. It's a good vibe, and it just doesn't change anything about the experience, and it increases it all the way around. So,
interesting. Yeah. I didn't know if that was going to be something that you guys were going to get into. I was actually very, very interested to hear like what else you guys have in the locations aside from tea. And I think that that's obviously important to be able to have a lot of different things as you guys are growing into markets that may not be drinking, you know, iced tea as much, just based on where they are from a climate perspective.
Exactly. Everybody can use a good glass of
tea. I love iced tea. Despite being from Chicago, I love it. I'm curious because this is something, you know, you mentioned that you have definitely increased the amount of, you know, flavors that you guys have available to you from a tea perspective. I'm honestly just curious, how do you guys come up with these different types of flavors that you guys are doing from a menu innovation standpoint? You know, is there any fun stories behind some of the flavors that you have that wouldn't necessarily be a common flavor that you guys decided, let's just try it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, you know, so all of our tea is broadleaf. And so, for instance, our mint tea, it's really complicated. It's spearmint and black tea, put in a bag and you brew it, right? Mm. So it's all broadleaf tea. All the flavors, we do use some flavors. We try to use a real piece of the flower or the plant to extract the flavor from. If we can't, we do have to use some flavors, not many. Coconut, for instance, you can't extract coconut from the actual coconut plant. So we have to extract it from a flavor, which is a natural flavor. But, you know, we just build ideas and flavor profiles. We have a root beer flavor. And so we, you know, root beer is made with roots. It's brewed like beer, right? So one of our tastings where we were trying three or four different, you know, ideas for a fall flavor. There was this one flavor that had this overwhelming taste like root beer. And it wasn't presented as a root beer when our R&D guys kind of presented it to us. It wasn't presented as a root beer flavor, but it was obvious that that's what it needed to be named, right? I don't know if that was a great from a marketing standpoint, but it definitely had there was an intrigue factor to it. So, and it's amazing. In fact, there may be some in there right now. I don't know.
Does sound amazing. I don't drink soda anymore, but I love root beer.
Well, you would.
It's like my favorite. It's the only thing.
It'd be amazing if you taste the tea and you're like, man, this is real tea. This is tea and it tastes like root beer. Well, if you understood how root beer was made, you'd understand why we can get that kind of flavor.
That's awesome.
The strawberry flavor, the strawberry passion, there's no strawberry in the strawberry passion flavor. It tastes like strawberry. But if you try to brew a strawberry, it's very bitter, right? You taste a strawberry, it's either going to be bitter or it's going to be sweet, but it's always going to have bitter to it. If you try to brew some tea with strawberry flavor, it just doesn't work. And so we have a flavor that tastes just like strawberry, but there's no strawberry in it. It's passion fruit. So there's just so many different ways to to do that R&D. But now that we have a solid 14 or 15 flavors, like 14 or 15 different bags of tea that we brew at the store, we'll do some sweet and some unsweet. You know, really the sky's the limit, because if you take, if you just do the math on it, you know, we could take, you could take half and half of 25 flavors and come up with almost 300 different combinations of half and half without duplicating any flavor. And so that's another reason why the tea bar is popular inside. Mm. People mix the tea and you can make it taste however you want. If you like it sweet or you don't like, I mean, if you'll notice, our sweet tea is very sweet.
It's I'm drinking the unsweet, and it's actually, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I typically like sweet
tea. I only drink unsweet too, but if you'll get our sweet, it's very sweet. Well, the idea is that you can mix it half and half. So you make it however sweet you want.
Oh man.
Yeah. And so that's all a pretty,
combos.
Pretty popular
all the
so idea there.
You mentioned one of those locations. I think it's the second location. I forgot which we were talking early on. And you mentioned that you had one of the stores shut down, that you're doing a project on some innovations. Yep. Is there anything that you can talk about?
Yeah, we're remodeling that one for full-blown coffee. And we actually redid the whole front of house. We moved the tea bar in the back, put the merchandising out front. But that store wasn't designed for coffee. The new HTOs are. We have a sneeze guard, a little countertop prep area that we can easily convert to add the coffee equipment. That store, there was never any thought of coffee in that store. So we had to completely pull the bar out and redo it all. So,
yeah. So, what I like about you guys is you're constantly just experimenting and you've kind of got lightning in the bottle and you've got massive growth ahead of you. You've not only proven it out, but it's a great business and you're franchising it. What I would call the 10-year overnight success story, and you're kind of on the rocket ship. Zach, what else do we want to go into?
I'm kind of curious how you guys are actually educating people as it relates to this new phenomenon, because I don't actually even think you know this, but the way that I found HTO was that I was curious, just like we were talking, we're just like, you know, like, is there like a brand that's like starting a category? And I remember we were talking about this when I was in Arizona with him like last year, which is when I got COVID, but from my parents, of course, their fault. But anyways,
we were making fun of Brad, you have a cough, you do not have COVID. Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to go get tested. I'm pretty sure.
And then he came back, he's like, yeah, I have COVID. And then his roommate and I both got it, which was cool. But at any rate, we were talking and I was just like, you know, like, I never heard of you guys before that. And it's my job to know all this stuff. And so I was just like, that's really cool. And then I looked up online and you guys had like 28 locations at that point. I was like, whoa, how have I never heard of this? Uh-huh. So I reached out to Andrew on LinkedIn, and that's how I ended up talking with you guys. And it's probably like a top 20 episode for us in terms of listeners. We've done 327. Cool. So it's great.
Excellent.
But
yeah,
I am just kind of curious, you know, is there any technology you're using to do that? Is there maybe you guys are doing something through social media that's helping you do that? I'm not sure, but is there any, what would you say is kind of, if you had to pinpoint a couple of reasons behind how you're explaining this phenomenon?
Man, all I can tell you is that we're focused on what I call unit level economics. Mm-hmm. We're focused on the product. We're focused on the customer. We're not focused on franchise development. We never have been. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that means other than I really don't care if we sell any more stores. I just want to sell. I just want to do it right in the ones that we're
doing.
Some
of the best folks do it on accident. Yeah. That's the best.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that it's quite an accident. I mean, obviously there's a lot of intention behind what we're doing, but what I'm saying is that
it's organic.
I'm not, I'm just saying that I spend our resources building a better product, building a better location, building a better team, not on franchise development, lead captures. I don't care. Yeah. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. I'm just, you know what I mean? It's just, I just feel like I have a different, I just want to get it right at the unit level. You know what I mean? And once you get it right at the unit level, I think that's where how could you come up with a better scenario? If you get the unit level economics right, everything else should fall into place. And so
spreading the gospel, telling the story.
On the consumer side, obviously kind of in the beginning, and I love how the story about, I probably need to get closer to the mic here. I love this story about, you know, you decided to put that second unit in Midland, Texas. but from a consumer perspective, how are you educating the consumers on the category? I imagine it's basically you got to try it to really get the experience. But Is there anything that you guys have, you know, that you can think of or point to that's been really successful for you from a consumer marketing perspective?
Yeah, for sure. And that was our third location before we, before that we opened in Midland. There is our second prototype location. But yeah, I think absolutely 100% based on community marketing and, and creating a guest experience that's memorable, but legitimate. You know what I mean? Like, we really just want to impact communities. I have 21 entities that we run out of this office. A lot of those are holding companies, but it's quite a few operating companies as well. And we're focused on our team members first and our customers second. And just to build that culture internally, it was like you go to Midland, they're like, well, you're going to have to pay those people a lot more. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, McDonald's, you can start there for $14.50 an hour. I'm like, we're not going to have to do that here. Not that I don't want to pay them what they're worth. I'm just saying we don't have to start people at $14.50 an hour. There's a lot of non-monetary compensation that happens that we teach that we actually care about someone and love someone inside the store and care about their day and their life, and they don't go home smelling like a French fry at the end of the day. You know, there's a lot of non-monetary reasons why people want to work there, but the
I don't know where that got me.
It's actually true.
I grew up in the restaurant business, so my stepdad's truck to this day smells like a grease trap. I mean, you know, it's just like you get in there, you walk out of that restaurant every day, and you put your feet on the carpet, it stinks. So, anyway, there's just a lot of non-monetary reasons, you know, to want to work there, and we just focused on something different. We've never been worried about. When I say we've never been worried about money, I mean, we've never been worried about like growth and numbers and like, they're always asking me, how many stores do you want to open this year? I'm like, I don't care. I could care less. I want them to be open correctly. Of course we want to open them faster. Of course that guy over there needs another store in his neighborhood so that he can overcome obscurity. But I don't care about those numbers. All I care, they're like, you want to do the Fortune 500 deal? I'm like, no, I don't care. We need to fill out this application. We're going to win every category. I'm like, we don't care. I don't care. All I want to do is get it right at the unit level. And I still don't feel like we've gotten it right. And so until then, I don't know what else we're going to do, but just to build it from the ground up. And we're working unit level. Unit level economics is all I really care about.
This is what you call a good old Texas straight shooter.
Yeah, I like it. In closing, Justin, because obviously we want to make sure that we get you back to your day. Is there any other major initiatives that you haven't mentioned that you want to talk about? I think the coffee thing is a big deal.
It is, yeah.
Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you want to get into at all?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, geographically, we're focused on Florida. We're focused on Arizona. We know that the coastal bend will fill in on its own if we focus on Florida the way we did Texas. And Arizona, of course, is an amazing market. Lots of heat, you know, iced tea. Is really good.
Yeah, you're gonna need iced tea down there.
Yeah, and there, we also sell water in the stores, and so we sell purified water in the store. And there's already a decent purified water industry or market in the Phoenix Scottsdale area. Mm-hmm. So super excited about that, and really going to be focused on that. But man, we're just trying to get it right at the store, man. That's where our focus is. Our decisions, I say it all the time, are based on unit level economics, and I don't want to take my focus off of that. You know what I mean? Because if we support these partners, which of course we could do a better job at supporting the partners, and we are hiring every day, but to hire good people and train them properly, it takes a minute. So we've added another member to our construction team. Now brings it up to five legitimate construction pros that are dissecting this process, you know, very intelligently to figure out how to get these stores built on time and under budget. We're leveraging the power of the brand to get our pricing down. As you know, construction prices are through the roof. Real estate prices are through the roof. I mean, the government prints $11 trillion. We've got some things to face down, you know, and that may also become a blessing for me, because it's very difficult to find real estate right now. And if I'm starting this company today
without your past experience,
Well, and maybe not as I had done in 2017, 2018, 2016, we started hunting that Midland real estate, man, I don't know. Oh, yeah. I don't know if this doesn't work out the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have, Brad Williamson is the best real estate professional in the United States of America in terms of a franchisor tenant representative type, you know, perspective. He's the best, and we're navigating very complicated real estate deals and pulling them off day after day in a very difficult market.
Right? Yes, you know? Very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate your time and hopping on here. We're really happy we got a chance to, you know, talk through everything with you. I think that I always love being around many in my life. I always love to see a true visionary, and that sir is definitely you. So I loved getting a chance to talk about this with you. And I think I can speak for Ryan when I say you are welcome back anytime.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you guys. Y'all do a good
Where
job.
Where do folks go to learn more about the franchise opportunity?
Yeah, it's just hteo.com. hteo.com. And I think we're launching a new website pretty soon. I don't know for sure where they're at on that, but hto.com.
Proper. Go check them out, folks. And it was fun. It was a fun episode.
It was great. Thank you for welcoming us to Fort Worth. And if you'd like to listen to more episodes like this, folks, please go to Modern Business anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Thank you very much.
Cheers, guys.